Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Zwift for Tirreno Adriatico Stage 7, the final stage. Now, maybe if they reverse the parkour, it would be a little bit more interesting as the final stage for GC. This used to be the opening time trial. They'd finish here in the opening time trial. Maybe it was the final time trial. But now it's a sprint stage. 155Ks. There's medium mountain in the first half, and then the last half they go up and down the seafront on the flat, which is great stuff, in San Benedetto del Tronto. Now, those mountains at the start could be used. Dainese said after the stage that he and DSM, they really wanted to make it more difficult for riders like Philipsen, Groenewegen, and Jakobsen, and have more of a reduced sprint. But the other teams were sort of letting his wheel go, and eventually a decent enough break formed, Benji.
Yes, certainly. We had in the breakaway Nos Peters from Aje Desert, Honoré from EF Education First. We had Fortunato from Aiolo, Zoccarato, another Italian pro team rider, Armirai, Van den Abele Ferron, and Arthur Kluckers. Kluckers is one of those guys that, I swear, a pretty talented Luxembourg guy that ended up signing for Tudor. But anyway, this break was up the road, and it's a large breakaway, so it's going to take a bit more riders to control, but there's enough teams here that won the sprint day. You've got so many sprinters that haven't gotten their victory yet. Groenewegen wants his team to chase a bit because they always chase on any possibility for a sprint stage, which I probably enjoy. Next to that, Quickstep's a team that wants a sprint. We've got Alpecin who wants a sprint. We've got DSM who wants to make it a bit hard. So as a consequence, they're also making it tougher for this breakaway. So there's so many sprint teams that want something out of the stage that eventually this break would be getting caught. But it took a bit long, I would say. But maybe that's a calculated thing, eh? Maybe the peloton knows, oh, we don't necessarily need to go all out because the break's like a half a minute ahead. So let's wait a bit longer. Let's catch them in the last portion. And that's what they were being caught at in the last portion. Now, we're going to go straight to a sprint, right?
Yeah, it looked like oh, they might not get caught, but there's too many teams that have worked here. There were some teams. They were, like, dicing with, do we try and keep our last man? Do we, you know, use him to pull? Like in Kerner last year, Quickstep used their whole team to pull because they needed to bring back Laporte, and they only managed to do it in the last 300 meters. It didn't get to that stage. The break was in sight. They could see them 5 seconds ahead with about 3.5 kilometers to go. Yeah. What was curious, this is a very, very technical finish. There's roundabouts, a narrowing of like 2-3 rider widths. Very, very technical, dangerous, some would say, run in. And it's because stages finish in these towns and European villages or towns that pay for the finish. Well, there's loads of road furniture and traffic calming because that's a good thing for making cars slow down. But when a bike race comes through, it makes more obstacles to dodge. So I mean, this stage is a perfect example to me of why the 3 kilometer rule is completely pointless, should be abolished, does nothing for safety, creates more stress, creates an additional sprint for an imaginary finish line that shouldn't really be there, because now the GC teams keep pacing after 3 kilometers to go. We see it all the time, particularly with Ineos.
Yeah, Filippo Ganna's the rider that's at the front. Then the curious thing when it comes to that is that he's pacing with no Ineos rider within the 30 or 40 first riders. Now, I'm guessing, and you're guessing, that it's because Gegenhardt was probably near him initially, and then he went to the front, and Gegenhardt lost the wheel somewhere or something, and he thought that Gegenhardt was still close, I would guess. But there's no point in that, eh? Right? What was the point in a team being still doing that? Is it because they're still scared of crashing?
Yeah, I think, well, it's one of two things. Either Ganna thought someone could lose the wheel through one of these corners, and Van der Poel nearly had his wheel lost through one of these corners or quick sections. Or second, yeah, they think the 3 kilometer rule's nice and all, but you still need to finish in the bunch.
Yeah.
And it is safer at the front. So we don't want our riders crashing. We don't want them caught behind a split if there is a split. So yeah, like it just, anyway, there's studies that have been done that show that the 3 kilometer rule, the introduction of it, has not reduced crashes. And I would say it increases stress, and we should be more focusing on having safer finishes, which have been a struggle this week. We had a car on the course in Paris-Nice today. We had that ridiculous bollard in one of the sprint stages earlier in the week in Paris-Nice that Martinez nearly careened into. At Seneschal, I was talking about it on Twitter. Same in across all the races. Anyway, if you don't want to have issues on the road, Zwift Hub is the training device for you with full immersion feel. It feels completely real. Smarter workouts, a wireless connection, whisper quiet, and a rock solid construction for $4.99. Built for your bike, coming pre-installed with a cassette to match the gearing on your bike, and easy to set up instructions. If you want to check it out and then jump in and jump onto the Zwift, you can go to the link down below to check out the Zwift Hub, the best value price trainer in the overall trainer market. Thanks to Zwift, as always, for supporting the show. But coming to a sprint, Benji, Jakobsen. I've been saying Jakobsen mechanical day for a while, and it finally came. Melier didn't get every sprint right either at Paris-Nice.
That's for certain. Now we're going into this final stretch, and we see certain teams applying certain strategies. Quickstep, one of them is that they're moving up with a four-man train. Jakobsen in last wheel with 2 kilometers to go on the left side of the road, and they're actually failing to do so because they've got three riders with them, and Jakobsen loses the wheel with 1.9 kilometers to go and gets, I don't know, there was a gap to follow the rider, but he didn't really go for it. Maybe there's still a bit of the scariness from his Tour de Polonia history and so forth. I would believe that Jakobsen probably still has consequences of that in terms of his abilities of going through gaps and so forth, and a slight fear there, which is understandable. And in this situation, he just doesn't really follow Ballerini through that gap. And as a consequence, he's not with Ballerini, who moves up with the other two riders almost to the front. And Jakobsen ends up without a pilot with 1.5 kilometers to go and has to try and move up alone. But if he's positioned 25 then into the last kilometer, another Quickstep rider is P13, another rider is P3. Those two riders are not going to be able to help out Jakobsen from those positions. So if you're them, you look back and you try and find Jakobsen again and you try and fix the situation, right? Is that not also kind of their fault?
I've seen Jakobsen let his lead outs wheel go too many times now to put it on them. Seneschal tried to... Oh, no, that was Merlier. I'm sorry, San Juan. San Juan, he let... Merkus. Same sprint. He let Merkus wheel go. And then he shot up the barriers and that stupid spectator was leaning with the phone out and nearly... Well, it did hit him in the face, but it could have cut him up or something worse. I don't know. You needed to be first, like, six wheels with 1K to go. That was the problem with this sprint. That was where you needed to be at. And we have GC teams mixing up. Van Aert didn't contest this sprint. We saw he was riding for Roglic in the wheel. I was hoping to see Roglic maybe leading Van Aert out. Didn't happen. It was a bit of a messy sprint. No one crashed, thank God. But Philipsen and... I mean, Van der Poel was really good again today. This is two lead outs in a row where he's been good. And also... I think he had a gap through a corner, looked back, and kind of paused a bit rather than unleashing full beans.
Yeah, that seemed to be the case. And you've got the situation. You have Mathieu van der Poel going into those corners. Ballerini still there. That was the rider of Quickstep. That was the highest up. That's in second position. Philipsen in third wheel. When it comes to the other sprinters, there were two more teams that really mattered for a potential stage win here that both kind of came up at the same time. First, you have Jayco, who had a strategy where they had firsts with roughly 1.3 kilometers to go. Mezgets pacing or piloting Groenewegen to the front. I think it was on the left side of the road, but I'm not sure about it. And they move up, and Mezgets, instead of like dropping off, he goes and sit behind Groenewegen roughly. And we see that come into play in the final when Groenewegen is trying to get to the wheel of Philipsen in this sprint. And Mezgets is still in the wheel to try and help him out later on. Because then Mezgets gives another lead out for Groenewegen on the right side of the road. And the same happens with Kofod, is where they've got multiple riders there, two riders, and they also pull a lead out at that final. So, like you said, Mathieu van der Poel going through that corner, in his wheel Ballerini, Philipsen, two riders of two teams that are ready to do another lead out next to those riders, and we go into the final section.
Gaviria was in pretty good position. I was quite disappointed with where he finished. Maybe he spent a lot to get there. I mean, he doesn't really have a last man here. Bauhaus was brought up by, I think, let me guess, he's Italian, he's got to be here, Pascal On. So Pascal's actually been pretty solid. 35, 36 years old from Intermarché. He's still a very valuable rider, I think. He brings Bauhaus up, but being brought up with 500 meters to go is always so much more costly than just being third wheel, getting a lead out already from 500 meters to go. And that's where Philipsen was. We saw the same thing with Coy and Paris-Nice. You don't want to be second wheel. You get less draft in second position. Third wheel's where he is. He's behind the Quick-Step lead out and his own lead out. And Ballerini, you asked me, should it criticize Quick-Step Benji? This is where, yes.
Yeah.
You, if you do not have your lead out, and you can look back when it's strung out a bit, you'll see, I've seen guys look back, like I think Van Poppel or Mullen have done it before. If you look back and your lead out man is not third wheel, and then if he's not third or second wheel, then you probably can't see him at all. If you can't see him at all, do stop your lead out. Stop your lead out completely. All you're doing is making it harder for him to move up. And in reality, Jakobsen was not contesting. But what if Jakobsen was in fifth wheel?
Yep.
Or sixth wheel? And you're basically delivering Philipsen and dropping him off at, I think, 140, 135, and you're dropping Groenewegen off there. Even if Jakobsen's fourth or fifth wheel, he can't make it up because those guys are going to do 10 seconds and it's impossible for him to win. Now, if you stop at 225 and Jakobsen's in fourth or fifth wheel, well, now they're going to have to launch too early, and they will launch. So that's something where you will see Merku as well. He will stop his lead out if he can't see his guy in the wheel, because why help someone else? And that's what happens. Philipsen jumps. He's super aero. It's that close to the finish. And I thought Groenewegen was going to beat him, actually.
Really?
I thought Groenewegen was going to be able to jump out of his wheel because when he is in good position, he has that huge burst, but he either spent too much or Philipsen is... I mean, he's gotten quicker. This is what we were saying about Coy. It's like, okay, Coy's not blowing the doors off at 21 years old, but Philipsen wasn't in 21 either, and now he's beating Groenewegen easily, straight up.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Impressive from Philipsen. Impressive from Van der Poel. Two stage wins. Good terrain from them.
Yep, for certain. We know that Philipsen's one of the best sprinters in the world. Last year, he was the best sprinter in the world, in my opinion. And that's partially also because he has that quality of positioning himself that well, because he can dive through every single small gap. And we saw that a few times today as well, where he fights his way into positions by just being there quicker than others, because he can go through gaps that others can't go through. And that's once again available here. Now, Groenewegen is once again brought perfectly to the wheel of Philipsen there by Mesgets on the right side of the road at 600 meters to go, after already being piloted to the front already. So I'd argue that Jayco actually really got it right as well, despite Groenewegen not beating Philipsen here. Their lead out was top notch. And the same for Cofidis. I have no clue who finished where for Cofidis. I'm guessing it's going to be for Kukar. Oh, Consani, that explains. Kukar is probably not here then. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, Gaviria, he was basically behind the Cofidis and Jayco train with 600 meters to go. So I was like, it's maybe a bit too far. Biniam's too far. Looks like there was another Intermarché rider fighting there for the sprint. That's probably going to be Tönnesen, is my guess. I should probably look at the top 10 to actually see which riders these are. But there's no Intermarché rider in the top 10, so I've got no clue who that rider is. I'm going to guess Tönnesen. But yeah, it's like, Jordi Mees is also that kind of rider now where he wasn't in that position when the sprint started, and he's then fighting in that 10th position, and you can't win a race like that. What do you think about this? There's a lot of sprinters that have an opportunity to move up with roughly 500, 600 meters to go, and from like an 8th or 9th position, and don't do so because they want to save their energy for the final sprint. But you can't win anyway, right? From that position, so wouldn't it be better to just risk it for the victory? Spend a bit of energy moving up in the wind on the right side, try and fight a position in front of you to then sprint from that wheel, because otherwise you can't win in the first place.
You're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess. I mean, Gaviria launched early the other day, nearly won. So is Gaviria regretting not jumping? He finishes 10th here. The other day, he nearly won. So I don't know. The problem was the good sprinters, the best sprinters here, were also in the best position, apart from Jakobsen, being Philipsen and Groenewegen. So if they're in good position, they're dropped off with 200 or less. Like, you got these guys ruined everybody. Dainese came third from bad position. Bauhaus 4th, Consoni 5th, Nizzolo 6th, Mace 7th, Russo on Arcade 8th, and Colnaghi and Gaviria. Other news, Kelderman didn't start the stage because of his crash yesterday. Pidcock crashed during the stage and abandoned, which is a shame because I think he was supposed to do Milano-San Remo next weekend, and I don't know, it's obviously never, I don't know his condition. So hopefully he's okay. And in terms of GC, Roglic wins. They were lying to us, Benji. Roglic here with no pressure, just to ride around Italy. I think not. Wins GC by 18 seconds out of Almeida. Gegenhardt, a good result. Third in 23 seconds. Kemner, very nice. 34 seconds in fourth. Then Ciccone, Landa, Carthy looking good in seventh. But with a longer climb, I think Carthy would have been better than that. Vlasov, eighth. Pinot, ninth. Adam Yates, 10th. I will say this was a very bonus and medium mountain heavy race. And some of the pure climbers like Mas, Carthy, and Landa were hampered by this parkour and the mountain stage.
Maybe you've already said it, but who lost position in GC? Because I swear Pino was 10th this morning.
Wilco?
I don't know. Leknesund? No, I don't know. Wilco, was he in top 10?
Enric.
Enrique's gone.
No, that can't be right. That's not
has
right.
To be
he,
wrong.
He finished. I saw him finish next to Roglic at the finish.
Okay, then just forget what we just said. The list I'm looking at is
wrong.
He must
have changed bike.
Yeah. There was some drama this morning, though, when it comes to the times of GC riders, because we had a situation where this morning we had an announcement by Paris-Nice that there would be a penalty
Tirreno.
For certain riders. Okay, Tirreno Adriatico. All these races, come on, man. Can't do anything about it, eh? So many races. Anyway, in Tirreno Adriatico, there would be a time penalty of 20 seconds for certain riders that rode on the footpath on the Muro del Borgo di Cova, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
The steep climb yesterday, and I completely forgot what it's called. That climb, there was like a side of the road where with some bollards, and certain riders rode on the footpath, then went on the road again when the bollards were there. There's also certain riders that went behind the bollards on the footpath. And some of those riders got penalized 20 seconds. Now, this morning...
And 500 francs.
Wow. 500 Swiss francs. They're going to be so sad about the 500 Swiss francs.
You give 500 Swiss francs?
The team probably paid 500 Swiss francs, I'm pretty sure. No?
Actually, that's an interesting question. Can any team let us know who pays the fines?
Exactly.
No, it's the riders.
That's true. And also, like, is that like a scaling
francs.
System? Because, like, a Conti team shouldn't pay the same fines as a Walter team, right?
They do.
It's crazy.
Are
anyway.
Sure? And the women pay the same, didn't they?
I don't know. There was, like, some drama, right?
There
when
was,
it comes
I remember.
To, like, a few years ago in Ronde van Vlaanderen when Borghese had her DSQ because of throwing a bottle or something. Something vague. Anyway. Situation was as follows. Landa and Carthy would lose 20 seconds and would drop in GC. With Mas being in GC at that time, that would mean that Pinot would move up to 8th position.
Oh, is he not fined?
No, he was the mover onwards to the top to 8th position, while Carthy and Landa would drop to 9th and... to 10th and 11th, because Adam Yates would then come above the 10th rider. I don't know. There was a movement there. Anyway, just to talk about it, what do you think about this penalty, knowing that the rules say as follows? We know that riding on the footpath, if it's indicated and obvious that it's a footpath, like...
If there's a level change, which there wasn't.
It says level change or physical features. What is a physical feature? Does a bollard count as a physical feature?
I mean, I guess. This is the Lampard discussion again, isn't it? Like,
it
isn't
is.
This the whole Lampard thing? It's a very similar type of road and road furniture where there's no level change, but there's some indication that one is not like the other. And isn't there something in the rules about if that's the case, it's incumbent on the organizers to put a, shouldn't they just, if they don't want them riding there, put a strip of, what's a strip?
Fragile tape.
That's the one. Yeah. The police tape, the murder, murder scene tape between the bollards. Just tie it up, take 5 seconds. And they're doing a circuit, by the way. They do this climb 3 times and problem solved.
Yeah, exactly. Now there's also a segment in the rules that says that the organizers should actually block this off. Like you mentioned, if there's a large chance of a rider deviating from the course, whether it's on purpose or not on purpose. So I'd argue that there's also blame to be given to the organizers here in the same way that we said at Paris-Roubaix with the Lampard discussion when he went like off the road and then around the boulder thingies that were standing by the side of the road. Anyway, all this being said, there's also multiple riders that and did this around the bollard, because those are the riders that did get penalized, not the ones that went on the footpath without the bollards, only the ones behind the bollard. And there's plenty of riders that did that, like eight that I counted just by watching in 6 minutes, just scrolled back to the stage of yesterday, saw eight riders that also went behind the bollards and weren't penalized. So,
wait, so you're allowed to go between the bollards?
Yeah.
You're allowed to ride on the footpath, but yeah, you cannot go behind the bollard.
Makes no sense. Well, does it
and
make
sense?
And
they announced this morning. It's yeah. They didn't do it last night.
I don't know if maybe it was last night, but I saw it this morning on
I think
Twitter
it was this morning.
It rose up. So,
and then they rescinded it during the stage.
Yeah. So just we've been through this entire discussion to say to you that they brought in that rule, they penalized those riders just to unpenalize them during the stage. So it's all been useless, but it does make you question everything, eh? Because, like, first of all, not consistently applying the rule to all the riders behind the bollards. Secondly, should it be only for riders that go behind bollards? Because otherwise, Roglic and Almeida should also have lost 20 seconds because they were also on the footpath. Then half the peloton loses 20
That's
seconds.
That's what's happened, though, clearly. Like, someone from Bahrain or EF, quite rightly, have sent very obvious screenshots to the commissaire saying, are you fucking kidding me? How have you not penalized everyone else that did this? And then they're like, oh well, we can't give everyone 20 seconds, so
but if the bollards but if the bollards are the physical features in the rules, then the riders that ride in between aren't technically breaking that rule, unless you're going to count the gutter as the physical feature that divides the road and the footpath. It's becoming difficult, huh?
I think with no level change, I mean, you either find them all or you don't. I think drawing a distinction between riding behind the bollard and riding between them, to me, there's no distinction there. If it's a footpath and you're not supposed to ride on it, then yeah, you're not supposed to ride on it. The bollards are suggesting that. They're not saying that you're supposed to
ride in between
just
them.
Just ride in between them. That's nonsensical. So you either find everybody or you don't. And they didn't have the stomach to find everybody, so you find nobody. Even though, yeah, I don't like riders riding on footpaths or whatever. We also don't know in the commissaires or DS briefing before Torino or in the road book, which I haven't checked, did they say, hey, don't ride behind those bollards. We will fine you if you do that. If they have said that, then you fine everybody. But they didn't fine everybody, so maybe they didn't say that. And if you really care about it, tape it off.
Exactly. They should tape it off on paper because that's in the rules.
It's a circuit.
It's the organizer's fault.
Of course. We're not like drive through every kilometer of a 200 kilometer normal road stage and sweep every corner of every bit of that. Is like that is an unreasonable request of organizers. But on a circuit, if you really don't want people to ride somewhere, tape it off. I mean, it's interesting because on those Alcala La Real and those Andalusia finishes, Benji, they're very similar, but there's actually no bollards, but there's people standing in the road. and riders like Landa was there and the riders used the whole road. The reason Roglic didn't ride behind the bollards, maybe because he was scared of Landa, and they crashed him like five times.
Yeah, 100%.
Anyway, he wins GC here. Just like Paris, I've learned nothing new, to be honest.
You only learn that Roglic's injury is not a lasting one, that he's shown up on level, and you can expect him to be on a solid level at the Giro d'Italia. That's the only thing you learn from this race. You also learn, like Paris-Nice, about the secondary GC riders, I guess. You learn a bit more about Mas confirming once again that he's pretty damn good. That I still argue, if this race has no headwind on the mountain finish, on Sassoteto, Mas wins that stage. Depending on the bonus seconds, he might not win the race, though.
Who went with him? Landa? Ciccone? Yeah, I think the climbing guys, I think Roglic, a lot of things were in his favor in this race. First of all, Van Aert was happy to be a domestique the whole time, and so Roglic got to gobble up all the bonus seconds. And listen, he only won by 18 seconds, which is... How many damn bonus seconds did he take?
30. Almeida would have been in GC if Roglic wasn't... Right?
Yeah, Almeida smoked him in the TT. Not smoked, he beat him by 8 seconds. Roglic's TT was bad, 49 seconds. So yeah, like, he wins on bonies, and one of those was where Van Aert crashed out and he won the stage. So, swings and roundabouts. I agree, I think Roglic's top climbing shape wasn't quite there, but listen, 3 stage wins in GC. That's a good result for someone coming here without pressure. Otherwise, things I've learned from GC, Carthy's in much better shape than last year. Yep. And UAE, who knows?
Ineos, nothing not changes, there, right?
Gegenhardt third, I think, is
good.
Yeah,
you're right. I'm wrong. I was in knees head again. These races, like, I'm always mixing them up at the same time when they're on.
Should there be one mini Grand Tour between Paris-Nice and Torino?
One? Ooh.
Like a 12-day race.
And like the last stage of Sanremo, that's overkill. That's overkill.
So yeah, you it's a Grand Tour. It's the Tricolore. You go Tirreno, France, and then Northern Spain. And it's just one race.
Yeah, but you start off with stage one being Strade Bianche.
Yes. No. And then you finish with Clásica Jaén in the south of Spain. And you have to do Fornardes and Drôme Classic. On the way through south of France in the Ardèche region.
We're inventing great Grand Tours.
Yeah, listen, Torino. I don't know. Ineos, I don't know what I would do if I was them, actually, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
I really... Giro's easy, all in for G. I would send Gegenhardt to the Tour. I would not send him to the Giro. I think Gegenhardt is looking like, and things can change, obviously, but apart from G, who is still their best GC leader at 30-whatever years old, but he's doing the Giro. And I think Gegenhardt's their second best on current form. He's third in Valenciana, sixth in Andalusia, third in Torino with multiple podiums on stages. And the Tour de France is punchy. Some of the stages, Puy de Dôme is not so long. There is no TT kilometers, and it's a hilly TT. I think Gegenhardt to the Tour makes a lot of sense to me, actually.
I do think that Rodriguez will be on the same level that a Gegenhardt would be at the Tour. He's just injured right now since Strade Bianche.
True.
So that's like a similar thing, but I don't really mind them having two co-leaders like that in that race, in the same way that they had at the Vuelta, for example, multiple leaders. Like, even adding a Sivakov to that is not a crime.
I mean, you can't go in with Gegenhardt as a sole leader because he crashed out of the Vuelta. You saw that coming in Les Prairies, the technical run-in. I think Sivakov was caught up maybe there too. You can't put all your eggs in the Pidcock, Sivakov, Gegenhardt basket. So listen, throw a lot of shit at the wall and hope something sticks. Like, Pidcock's obviously going to go and get support. I wouldn't sacrifice Gegenhardt for him initially. Maybe you can win a stage. Like, winning a stage definitely is better than not winning a stage.
Hater Giro together with Thomas, or would you go all out for Thomas? Because there's hilly sprint stages in the Giro that I would argue, but yeah, Ethan Hager's positioning, let's be honest about it, that's the big issue, eh?
He can do Settimana Internazionale, copy of Bartoli. He can win Tour de Hungary GC. It's not at the same time as the Giro.
Luke Plab, Giro?
Sure. I mean, yeah, go for G. G's good in the cold.
Yeah. 100% Tour, for G.
Vuelta, Rodriguez, and whoever. Martinez. Everybody. I don't know. Like, I've given up trying to predict Martinez's shape. It's like, I thought he'd be good today or in the Paris, and he wasn't. I don't know. Anyway, that was Trinidad Adrico.
What
Pardon?
What did you say?
That was the end of Tirreno Adriatico. Burn after reading. What did we learn? No fucking idea. Roglic still the Terminator. Wins 3 stages in GC. Thanks very much for listening as always. And we're back with the Milano-San Remo preview early next week. Till then, ciao.